Martin Brom's away for a couple of weeks, so I'll be in doing the classes for this week and next week. My name's Bande Sujato. And for this week's, we go through to 4:15, don't we? Is that right? Yeah. This week's meditation, we're going to do some loving kindness meditation. There's just still a couple of people coming, so I'll just wait a minute for them. So, mobile phones off, please. So for this afternoon, we'll do some loving kindness meditation. And before we do the meditation itself, I'll just offer some guidelines, some handy hints about how to meditate. Actually, meditating is the easiest thing you can ever do in your life. I always find it very strange, you know, talking to people, and they always tell me how hard it is to meditate. Meditation is so easy, there's nothing to it. You just sit there and don't do anything. What could be easier? But so often when we come to meditate, we bring the same attitude, the same fixations, the same obsessions that we have in our ordinary life into the meditation. And of course, it's quite natural that we should do so. We're conditioned creatures. We do things out of habit. And we learn things because they work. And so if we look at what we do in our secular lives, you know, we identify a problem, we figure out a solution, and then you go out to do the things that you need to do to make that solution work. And that's how we go about things. But the problem with that, if you step back and look at what you're doing there, what kind of attitude that's behind that and what kind of process that assumes, It assumes that there's something that needs fixing. It assumes that you're the one who needs to do the fixing. And most of all, it assumes that the solution is somewhere in the future. I can do this, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then that will happen. But the way meditation works is not really like that very much. You don't have good meditation by trying to fix your mind so that at some undefined point in the future, everything will be okay. You have good meditation by giving up, by letting go, by not trying to fix anything. Have a think about what that means in, say, in the context of doing metta meditation, loving kindness meditation. Imagine that you're in a relationship with somebody. You get up in the morning, you have breakfast. You're sitting down at breakfast and you say, "Darling, there's something I'd like to discuss." And they say, "Yes, what is it, my dear?" And you say, "Well, I've been thinking about all the things that are wrong with you. And because I love you so much, I've made a list. And here's all the things that's wrong with you. And because I love you even more than that, here's how I'm going to fix all those things. All those things that I've decided are wrong with you, and I'm going to fix them for you. See, doesn't that show you how much I love you?" So, just to clarify here, I am being sarcastic, okay? This is not relationship advice. Even as a monk, I know that, all right? So, what's wrong with that scenario? Well, if you love somebody, you love them with all of their faults, don't you? You don't love somebody because they're perfect. You know, someone with all their faults. And who appointed you to be the fixer-upper of the other person? Right? If somebody needs help, let them ask for it. If if you can offer support, you offer support. But you don't sort of regard it as your kind of right to go on declaring what's wrong with somebody else and how you can fix them. That's not love. That's controlling and creepy and yeah. But isn't that the attitude we often have to our own minds? Right? Hey, think about this. Imagine if your mind was another person. Right? And when your mind is sitting there chatting all the time, it's like the other person is talking. Well, what's the first thing that most people say when they talk about meditation? They say, well, I tried to stop thinking. Right? Put that into the context of a relationship. What does that mean? Well, how's your relationship going? Well, it's going okay. You know, I tried to make the other person stop talking. But, you know, it's not very successful because every time I tell them to shut up, they just start talking again. But I'm working on it. And, you know, I think in the future, if I just try harder, I'll be able to get them to shut up completely. And then I'll have some peace. And then we'll have a great relationship. Do you think that would work? Does that sound like an effective relationship technique? I suspect not. Maybe you might actually think that you're actually getting somewhere. Tell someone to shut up and then, oh, it's quiet and I can be a bit peaceful. And maybe you can do that once or twice and it might be all right, right? Maybe occasionally you do need to say that. Do you mind just being quiet for a moment? But if you pursue that as your basic principle of your relationship, it's not very healthy. And it's the same thing with your mind. If your basic principle of meditation is, I don't want to listen to my own mind, right? So many people come and say, oh, I'm sitting there, I'm trying to not think. I'm trying not to listen to what my own mind has to say. Right? And so, yes, maybe you can do that occasionally and maybe you do feel a little bit peaceful for a short period of time. But it's not a very healthy way to develop your mind. Yeah. And we all know how that feels, to be shut down. Right? You try to say something, somebody says, just be quiet. There's a tension there. There's an energy. You want to, first of all, you still want to get that thing out that you wanted to say, but also now you feel upset and confused. Why have I been told to shut up? Or maybe you feel guilty and remorseful because you were doing something wrong. And so you're actually adding to all of these unskillful emotions, which is the opposite of what we should be doing in meditation. And so this is why we often think that meditation is very difficult. We're approaching it from the wrong angle. We're approaching it from this controlling angle. We're approaching it from this negativity angle. What can I stop? What can I make not happen? Rather than approaching it from, as the Buddha wanted us to do, the perspective of openness, acceptance, patience, so our first task when we want to meditate is not to make our minds shut up, but it's to understand. Right? Think about it again, the same way as you would in a relationship. It's the same thing. If you're having tension and problems in a relationship, your first task is to understand the other person. Why are they getting angry with me? Or why am I getting angry with them? Why do we fight all the time? Why do we have all these misunderstandings? And so your first job is to listen to that other person, to reflect and to understand what's going on. And we do the same thing in our minds. When you sit down to meditate, if your mind is thinking a million miles an hour about this and that, don't try to stop it. Try to understand it. Why is it that my mind keeps thinking like this? Why is it that even though I so want to be at peace, I can find nothing but noise and stress and anxiety. And when we can start to understand this, we have the beginnings of real meditation. We have the beginnings of a peace that doesn't come from suppression, doesn't come from forcing, doesn't come from striving hard, but that peace that comes from ending, from cessation. The whole course of meditation that the Buddha talked about, he used this beautiful word to describe the sequence of meditation he called Anubhubha Nirodha. It's a gradual cessation. Right? So it's not a gradual getting of things. It's not a gradual making things. Gradual ending of things. And every time in your meditation, when you find, there's something peaceful there, you should reflect back and say, why was that peaceful? What actually happened? And then you realize it wasn't because, I'm not peaceful because I tried harder. I'm not peaceful because I controlled myself. I wasn't peaceful because I concentrated. I became peaceful because something ended. Something comes to an end. That's where peace of mind comes. Anubhubha Nirodha, gradual cessation. Why do things come to an end? How do you make things come to an end? Of course, that's the conceited mind coming in again. I assume that if something comes to an end, I must be the one who's doing that. It's got nothing to do with you. Things come to an end because they're conditioned, that's all. Everything comes to an end. Every single thought you've ever had in your life has come to an end. Every single feeling that you've had in your life has come to an end. Every single memory that you've had has come to an end. Every emotion that you've had has come to an end. Every intention that you've had has come to an end, except for the ones that you're experiencing right now. Do you honestly imagine that this thought, this feeling, this emotion, this intention is somehow an exception? That somehow this thought is going to keep on going, even though every other of the million thoughts I've had in my life has come to an end, but this one is going to keep going? Of course not. Everything you're experiencing will come to an end, just as everything you have experienced in the past has come to an end, and everything you will experience in the future will come to an end. Nothing you can do about that. That's just how the world works. It's conditioned. It's impermanent. If you don't like it, you're in the wrong reality, I'm afraid. So everything comes to an end. So when you realize that, then you realize that in meditation, it's not my job to go around fixing things. I'm not going to become happy when I've learned to control my mind, to make this or do that, or to achieve this method, or do this or do the other. Beautiful verse, it's found very commonly in Buddhism. Anicca vata sankhara upadavaya dhammino upajitva nirujanti tesang vupasamo sukho. That's a beautiful verse. And it's a verse which almost seems, it's one of these things where in Buddhist philosophy, it almost seems like it's obvious. It's too simple. Anicca vata sankhara. Alas, all things are impermanent. Upadavaya dhammino. The nature is to rise and fall. Upajitva nirudhanti, having come to being, they pass away. Seems like it's almost too obvious to need stating. But then the last line, desang vupasamo sukho, their stilling is happiness. That's the one that really gets you thinking. Right? Why is it that the passing away of things is happiness? Normally, isn't it the other way around? Normally, isn't it getting things is happiness, having things? And then when they pass away, we get upset or we get sad. But not in meditation. Right? That's not how meditation works, is it? It's not just a theory. It's not just a Buddhist philosophy. This is asking you to reflect on your own experience. And this is something that you have seen in your meditation many times already. You don't have to accept it on my say-so. When something comes to an end, it's happiness. A thought comes to an end, it's happiness. A feeling comes to an end, it's happiness. So this happiness, this sukha, it's not something difficult or obscure. It's not hard to find. It's not dependent on another person. We don't have to, you don't have to be rich. You don't have to have all of these things. You just have to be patient and let all of those things come to an end. Desang rupasamo sukho. And one of the secrets when we're doing this practice in the context of metta meditation, loving kindness meditation, is to realize that this feeling of loving kindness that we talk about, just like everything in Buddhism, it's not just a theory. Right? Buddhism's not a theory, it's not really a philosophy or anything like that. It's a guide to your own experience. Loving kindness is a quality of the heart which is to be developed. Now the word, when we say in Buddhism, the word bhavana means development. But literally it means making more of something. Right? Making more of something. And that has a very specific meaning. What it means is that when we talk about metta bhavana, we translate that as loving kindness meditation. But it's a little bit different than that. What it means is making more of loving kindness. So what it means is you already have loving kindness. Right? You can't make more of something that isn't there. You already have it. And we're making it grow. We're helping it to grow. This is really important. So it's not a matter of saying, how do I make myself have loving kindness? The beginnings of loving kindness meditation is to recognize that the loving kindness is already there. Right? And we all have it. Now, of course, loving kindness itself is just a condition. It comes and goes. Sometimes we have it more, sometimes less. Maybe it disappears completely sometimes and then it comes back again and so on. So it's not there in the same way in a kind of fixed state all the time. It's always changing like everything else. But in your mind, in your life, you have that. Even if you don't know it, even if you don't see it, even if you don't believe me, okay? Just take it on trust for now. Not absolutely, but just take it on trust. You have loving kindness, and you can find that in your meditation. Now, sometimes it takes a while. And one of the things about loving kindness meditation especially, I mean, actually all meditation, but especially loving kindness meditation, it's very individual. Okay? So, there's what, 40-something people in this room today. So I'll teach one kind of meditation, but you'll practice 40 different kinds of meditation. Okay? And I don't know what it is that you're doing. All right, I'm not sitting here reading all of your minds, believe it or not. Okay, so you're all doing different taking things that I've talked about, and you're doing different things with them. All right, which is fine. So don't expect that, you know, it'll just happen straight away, or that you just, you know, it's one thing. You take it, you try it out, and you see how it goes. That's all. So what we're looking for in loving kindness is that feeling, the feeling of metta. It's almost like that feeling, it's like It's like the sort of the grass which has been sort of, you put a rock down on the grass or something like that, and it sort of keeps it down and stops it from growing. But then when the rock is taken off, the grass will spring back. And so our job is to just get out of the way and let the loving kindness come to the fore, not by making it be there, but just by being patient, by being accepting. We're reminding ourselves of that. Okay? We're reminding ourselves of it by using the words, right? So use the words, may I be happy, and so on. And these are there to give us some structure and some shape to the meditation. But we're just going to say those words gently, we say them evenly and steadily. Right? But without expectations, without forcing. And as we do that and we hold our mind peaceful and steady and go down that track, then you settle into it. Gradually things will start to fall away. And at some point, that feeling of loving kindness will spring up. None of us can say when that point will be. When you've developed the meditation, when you know how to do it, then you can do that fairly quickly. You can do that every time you meditate. You realize that these things are not kind of random. They can be trained. But when you're first beginning the meditation, you don't really know how to do it. So some people might sit there and, oh, it's amazing. I felt this rapture and this joy coming over me. Other people are like, no, nothing. My heart is a desert. And they can sit there and even try it for, you know, many months or something like that, and nothing comes. So don't worry about it. Just be patient. It will come in its own good time. Remember, these things, these practices that we're teaching, they're nothing personal. It's not about you. Right? It's not that you can do it or can't do it or anything like that. It's just conditions, that's all. So the things that are conditioned in your mind have been conditioned in one way because of the past and all the things that's happened and so on. And then somebody else's mind is conditioned another way. That's all. It's just conditions. And those conditions are changing. So don't have any kind of expectations. Like each time you sit meditation, take it as being something very new and very fresh. Forget about what happened last time you meditated. That's in the past already. So we sit there, we meditate, we say the words, we know what those words mean, and we wait, and we watch. And then sooner or later, we're surprised because this beautiful feeling of loving kindness comes up. And it's like, wow, it's such an amazing thing. And the first time that happens, you realize, my goodness, I can do that. That's not something, you don't have to be a monk or a nun. You don't have to be some enlightened guru or anything like that. Even me, even I can do that. And that's pretty special. And when you have that feeling coming up in your meditation, you hold the feeling, you keep it close. And more you practice it, the more and more you stay with that feeling, the more you realize that this is a natural and normal way for the human heart to be. It's not natural to be alienated from love. It's not natural to feel that it's something rare and hard to achieve. It's natural for it to be there in your heart all the time. It's natural for it to be the space from which you act, and within which your life takes place. That's a natural state of being. It doesn't come from doing anything. It comes from allowing things to come to an end. Right? Actually, the feeling of loving kindness, all it is a feeling of connection. A feeling of the dissolving of boundaries. Right? And that's why it comes from a cessation. Actually, what's really happening when you feel the feeling of loving kindness is that you've let go of some wall or some boundary, that you've been holding in your own heart. That's actually what ceased. And some separation. And building those walls and maintaining those boundaries and separations, that's what takes energy and effort. Right? Letting them go doesn't take any effort. That's just going back to the natural state. So our natural state is to be loving and to be connected. Okay, so let's do some guided meditation for the next half an hour or so. And in this time, we'll do loving kindness for oneself and for a loved person. And before we begin, I want you to all think of one loved person that you can do loving kindness for. And when you're choosing that loved person, we want to be a little bit specific about it. Okay? A little bit careful, because in the meditation, it's like, think of it like a laboratory environment. You have to make sure everything's kind of nice and clean and predictable. You want to exclude unnecessary complications. All right? So this is not the time to be analyzing all of your twisted love-hate relationships. Okay? All those dark and perverse fantasies that you've been having. This is not the time for them, okay? This is the time for simple and playful and childlike, all right? So somebody who not, it doesn't, this, one of the tricks to doing loving kind as well is it doesn't matter so much how much you love somebody. What's much more important is how simply you love them, all right? How like a childlike love. Okay, so let's do some meditation for the next half an hour. And sitting quietly. Just listening to the sounds around. Feeling the touch of the seed. The touch of the cloth on your skin. Whatever your mind is thinking about right now, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Just be at peace with it. Whatever it is that you're feeling right now, it's okay. Just be at peace with it. we just sit quietly and watch it all go by. Watch everything coming, everything going, and it's okay. We begin with the words of loving kindness. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. And keeping the mind even and steady, strong and calm. Just focusing on the words for now, bringing a sense of quality and care to the words as we're saying them. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. And as we keep going with those words, look inside and see if you can notice that feeling of loving kindness. It's a soft glow, like a warm light, like a candle flame or a lamp flame. It's full of happiness and joy. When you notice that feeling, just gently hold it in the mind. Keeping it very safe. Holding it and keeping it there. As you continue saying, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. And then keeping your mind settled down inside your body and bring it to the second person. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May they be happy. May they be happy. Evenly and steadily. Keeping the mind settled inside your body. Developing that loving kindness for that loved one in just the same way as you develop loving kindness for yourself. and taking that same loving kindness and spreading it to all beings. Moving out from your body, out across the whole world, the whole universe. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Bringing the mind back inside the body. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Letting the words of metta go. Letting the feeling of loving kindness fade away. And allowing the mind to return to a neutral space. Empty, open and clear. And with the mind empty and clear, before we finish, taking a minute to reflect back and just look at how that meditation went, inquiring into cause and effect. What just happened? How did my mind change? Did that feeling of loving kindness arise inside me? What was it like? How is my mind different now compared to how it was at the start of the meditation? Finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, very good. So you can open your eyes and come out of meditation. So now we have a little bit of time, I think, for some questions. I'm not sure. How do we do the questions? Do we have...
Do you know questions from overseas?
No questions from overseas. Everyone overseas is happy and content. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Our work is done. We can close the Buddhist society now. Please, anyone with some questions? Yeah. Maybe wait for the microphone so that if it's being...
Bhante, as you develop a deeper and deeper appreciation of loving kindness and those compassion and bliss states, I'm wondering, because this is maybe it's autobiographical, but the more I actually develop a sense of bliss in those sorts of states, the more I correspondingly start to develop appreciation that life really sucks.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, as you get older, you start to really appreciate that there's real suffering that's not obvious when you're younger. And so it almost like works out that it's equal sides of the ledger. You know, I'm not sort of getting too wasp about this, but I do notice that there's an oscillation there between the capacity for deep pain and deep bliss and compassion. Can you say something about that? Do you understand what I'm talking about? Does this make any sense?
So, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That's
a very good point, although that's usually kind of like a bit of a secret. We don't usually tell people that kind of stuff. Anyway, not really. But, yes, that is important. When you're developing loving kindness, you're opening yourself up. Like you say, you're letting those boundaries dissolve, right? And that's where that feeling of happiness and bliss and release and so on comes from. Right? But at the same time, there's a reason why we put up boundaries. Right? There's a reason why we make fences between ourselves and our neighbors. There's a reason why we hide things away. Right? And many different reasons. But basically, we try to separate ourselves from things because they're suffering. Maybe it's something that we're scared of, or something that we're ashamed of, or something that we're anxious about, or something like that. And so we put all these boundaries, and we do that inside our own minds, just as we do that out in the world, and we try to separate and keep the other away. So when we start doing the loving kindness meditation, we start letting down those boundaries inside our own hearts, and letting those parts of ourselves come back into awareness, which we have pushed outside of awareness. Yeah? And of course, in those places, there's suffering, right? That's what we're doing. That's why we cut them off. It's why we tried to not feel them. We tried to not feel them because they hurt. And so when we let those things back in, yes, we go through that thing, and like you say, like an oscillation where the sort of the letting go and the happiness and the bliss that comes from that And then it comes maybe to a profound sadness, or maybe a profound anxiety, or maybe a profound fear, or something like that. And it seems like the further we go into the meditation, also the further, the deeper that these negative emotions and responses will also come, right? The important thing, the critical thing, is that that process should go in a sense, with a sense of balance, and in a way that our ability, our capacity to accept and to deal with those negative energies, we shouldn't exceed our capacity to do that. If we find that when we're meditating that we're simply being flooded by these things and we can't cope with it and so on, then that's a sign that we need to slow down and we need to put more effort on developing the happiness and the joy side of things. Yeah? But if we find that it's in balance, that those things come and we experience them for a while and we can finally fully feel what that means like to be terrified, to be afraid, and we can feel that and we don't need to push it away. Yeah? And you can just be with that, and then eventually that too will pass. And then that will go down, and then the meditation will go even deeper. Yeah? And so that's right, that's exactly right. That's this like kind of cycle. And that's what happens when you open yourself up, you let more things in. You're also letting more suffering in. Yeah, so that's actually, you know, it can be difficult at certain points of time. It will be difficult. You know, Ajahn Chah once said, Zhantan Brahm's teacher, he once said that if you haven't cried, then you haven't started practicing. Right? If you haven't cried in your meditation. So it's not all fluffy and kittens. Microphone. Do we have a microphone?
I do, but that would. Ajahn, which was such a good explanation and question, that in that coming with the loving kindness also comes the suffering. Could that also be experienced not just through thoughts that come through with the suffering, but or the suffering that comes through comes through as a result of thoughts, but also in a physiological sense, if there's something that's being represented in the body, could that come through panic attacks or anxiety stay with that fear of that, and as long as it's not going to debilitate the person, obviously. But if you have the strength to stay with that and recognise that that is part of the process, then that's
okay. Absolutely, yeah. In fact, these things will normally appear somatically, right? So they normally appear as some kind of physical symptom. It's not just a thought, you know, but actually, you know, that's again when the meditation's starting to drop down, it's real experience. Your body will heat up, or you'll start shaking, or there can be different kinds of physical symptoms, sometimes searing pain, or could be many different kinds of things. As a rule of thumb, the way to tell if this is a problem or not is, well, does it last after the meditation's finished, right? If it stays inside the meditation, then it's okay, right? And that's whether it's an emotional thing or a physical thing or anything like that. As long as when you finish meditating, you leave that behind. And so it's really important that your meditation. This is one thing that why I don't agree with people who say, oh, you don't really need to meditate. You just practice in your daily life and so on, and that be mindful, and that's good enough. It's not good enough. And this is one of the reasons why. Because in your meditation, you create a time and a space where anything can happen and it's okay, right? And you allow yourself to do that. And you can cry if you want, or you can sit there giggling if you want, or you can feel sick to the stomach, or you can, all of those things. And you can't do that when you're doing the shopping, right? And you can't do that when you're at work. You have to cope, right? You have to manage your emotions, right? And that's all right. Managing your emotions is all right. Coping is all right. There's nothing wrong with it. It's better than the alternative. Yeah. But in your meditation, you don't have to cope. Right? It's okay. You can do anything. That's why I always kind of said when in a monastery that there's all different people have different functions in a monastery. You know, someone's job is to do the teaching, someone's job is to look after the plumbing, someone's job is to do the sweeping, and someone's job is to go away to their heart and cry. Right? Because that shows everybody that it's okay. Right? And that's a really important job. It's a really important thing to do, just to be able to say, it's all right. I can feel sad. Yeah? And all of those different emotions will come and they'll go. And as long as when we get up from the meditation, we can leave them behind. Yeah? Say, okay, that's it. Yeah, very good, Lynn.
Last night you mentioned that the Lord Buddha was taught those who were who could feel. Is that what you had said?
Vedya Manasa.
Is that what you're saying now? That to feel that emotion? Is that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because that's the start of understanding the Four Noble Truths, right? Is you experience suffering. So as long as we're trying not to suffer, and I think this is sometimes a problem that we can come to in Buddhism, we can kind of feel that I'm a Buddhist, I'm supposed to be happy. Right? I'm a Buddhist, I'm not supposed to get angry. Yeah? And of course that's not what the Buddha said. You know, he said if you feel angry, you know that you're feeling angry. You feel sad, you know that you're feeling sad. Yeah? So you take on board those feelings and you know what they are. And that's the way that will allow those feelings to come to an end, not because you're suppressing them or pushing them away or anything like that, but just because you're not fueling them, you're not adding, you're not making more out of them than they need to be. So you just feel it all; it's okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's only feelings. It can be anything. Anything that you experience, yeah. I mean, yes, mostly I've been talking about emotions, yeah, but it could be anything. Yeah. You have a question? Yeah.
I've meditated quite a while, and just for the past month I've had a lot of extreme anxiety coming up, but more to the point where if I meditate, I'll manage it.
Okay.
And I'm not meditating, and I'm out there. It's it's just coming up all the time.
Okay.
I just heard what you said about, leave it behind in your meditation, but it's actually where it settles for me. But then, getting back out there, it seems to come up strong.
Okay. Is there any reason?
There are things happening in my life that are, making.
Okay.
I'm feeling anxious about, of course, but. Anything to say? I'm just trying to manage it as best I can, but
sure.
I just wanted to hear if you had a comment.
The fact that you've got things to be anxious about is good. It's better than being anxious and not having anything to be anxious about, and it's a bit more confusing. But why is it that it's just started? Is there anything that's changed? Why do you think, or do you not see anything?
Well, I'm not sure if it's because I started hormones again. I don't know. I used to be able to manage my my condition much better. It's an anxiety condition. I don't know if I'm just it's coming out from a deeper area, or I'm just not managing it well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's pretty extreme, it's become.
Okay.
Like I'm flying around all over the place, that's how it feels.
It sounds like a lot of suffering.
I've never just been able to leave stuff behind. I can leave it in meditation, but it's always there. I don't ever not feel it there.
Right, yeah. It's not so much you don't feel it, but like you say, it's just, you know it's there, but you just kind of can put it to one side. Okay. I can't say too much about what you can do and so on, but there are some basic things just to look at. I mean, the first thing to think about is, well, what are the kinds of things that are causing anxiety? And then you can start to think about, well, is it possible to change those things? In some cases, to avoid them. In other cases, it might be possible to approach them in a different way. So this is a way you can kind of think about it beforehand. Like you might think, well, when I go into work, I get anxious. So is there anything about my workplace that I can do a bit differently?
Yeah, well, you know, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But what I, well, especially caring for my elderly mother on top of everything else. But,
okay.
You know, like the frustration and the anxiety just comes for
yeah.
me. I can't sort of manage the intolerance sometimes,
yeah.
the worse she's getting, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you can help a little bit by doing those things, but then it will still come up. So
but before I can stop it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just happens. Yeah.
So another thing that's important to do is to be just to before you go into a situation where that's going to happen, right? Just take a minute or two before you step in the door. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Take a minute or two to stop and to just find a bit of clarity of mind. Okay? Just remind yourself, okay, I'm going into this environment that I find stressful and I'm going to go in there with mindfulness. And then you just watch it, and when the feelings come up, yeah, just know them as quickly as you can. Don't let them take you over. Yeah? And just keep on reminding yourself, it's okay to just step back, just allow that to calm down and then come forward. Yeah?
No, thank you for that, because it's something I don't do.
Yeah. It can be very useful to use physical boundaries to help yourself to manage those things, okay? So I talked about in meditation how we want to let all these boundaries go, okay? But I also mentioned that those boundaries form a function, okay? It's not that we just get rid of all boundaries altogether, but we know that the boundaries are only relative. They're only useful for certain kinds of things, okay? But you can use physical boundaries to help yourself, like before you step into a door, you can stop and remind yourself, okay, now I'm going into this place for this reason. And then when you step out again, you can remind yourself, now I'm stepping out of this place and I'm leaving that behind. Yeah? And that's one of the reasons why, for example, we find it easier often if we have a separate workplace and home place, right? Actually, different physical locations can help you to keep those two aspects of your life distinct. Yeah. So that's just another thing to think about that can help you to manage that a little bit better.
Yeah, that's good. Actually, my mother says to me, you know, in her country, she said they, before you say anything, roll your tongue like six times one way, whatever. But, you know, I haven't even managed that. But I think probably because I work more with the mind,
yeah,
might be the way to help pull myself back a bit, because it has become like I have not known it before.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So thank you very much.
So just keep reminding yourself, you're a good person. You're doing good things. You'll
yeah.
be okay. Okay, so I think we're out of time now. And let's finish by paying respects to the Triple Gem.